On July 24th, the athletes shuffled from the ship to a train, stopped over in Frankfurt for a welcoming dinner, and reboarded the train toting quite a few of their hosts' priceless wine glasses. The Germans chased down the train, searched the baggage, repatriated the glasses, and sent the Americans on to Berlin. There, the train was swamped by teenagers holding scissors and chanting, "Wo ist Jesse? Wo ist Jesse?" When Owen stepped out, the throng swarmed him and began snipping off bits of his clothing. Owens leapt back onto the train. The athletes were driven to the Olympic Village, a masterpiece of design crafted by Wolfgang Fürstner, a Wehrmacht captain. Nestled in an undulating patchwork of beech forests, lakes, and clearings were 140 cottages, a shopping mall, a barbershop, a post office, a dentist's office, a sauna, a hospital, training facilities, and dining halls. A new technology called television was on exhibit in the village office. There were wooded trails over which bounded a multitude of imported animals. The Japanese athletes were especially taken with the deer and began feeding them treats in such volume that the Germans discreetly moved the deer out. One British wag wondered aloud where the storks were. The next day, 200 storks appeared. Louis was housed in a cottage with several other athletes, including Owens. The great sprinter kept a fatherly eye on him. Louis repaid him by swiping his "Do Not Disturb" sign, leaving poor Owens besieged by autograph seekers. Louis swam in the lakes, ate appalling quantities of food, and socialized. The hit of the village was the Japanese contingent, whose tradition of prodigious gift-giving made them the collective Santa Claus of the Games. On the 1st of August, Louis and the other Olympians were driven through Berlin for the opening ceremonies. Every vista suggested coiled might. Nazi banners had been papered over everything. As much as a third of the male population was in uniform, as were many children. Military units drilled openly. And though powered aircraft were forbidden under the Versailles Treaty, the strength of the burgeoning Luftwaffe was on copious display over an airfield, where gliders swooped over impressed tourists and Hitler Youth. The buses had machine gun mounts on the roofs and undercarriages that could be converted into tank-style tracks. The city was pristine. Even the wagon horses left no mark, their droppings instantly scooped up by uniformed street sweepers. Berlin's gypsies and Jewish students had vanished. The gypsies had been dumped in camps, the Jews confined to the University of Berlin campus, leaving only smiling Aryans. The only visible wisp of discord was the broken glass in the windows of Jewish businesses. The buses drove to the Olympic Stadium. Entering in a parade of nations and standing at attention, the athletes were treated to a thunderous show that culminated in the release of 20,000 doves. As the birds circled in panicked confusion, cannons began firing, prompting the birds to relieve themselves over the athletes. With each report, the birds let fly. Louis stayed at attention, shaking with laughter. Louis had progressed enough in 4 5,000-meter races to compete with Lash, but he knew that he had no chance of winning an Olympic medal. It wasn't just that he was out of shape from the long idleness on the ship and almost pudgy from gorging on board and in the village. Few nations had dominated an Olympic event as Finland had the 5,000, winning gold in 1912, 24, 28, and 32. Lauri Leitinen, who had won gold in 32, was back for another go, along with his brilliant teammates Gunnar Hockert and Ilmari Salminen. When Louis watched them train, noted a reporter, his eyes bulged. Louis was too young and too green to beat the Finns, and he knew it. His day would come, he believed, in the 1500, 4 years later. In the last days before his preliminary heat, Louis went to the stadium and watched Owens crush the field in the 100 meters and Cunningham break the world record for the 1500, but still lose to New Zealander Jack Lovelock. The atmosphere was surreal. Each time Hitler entered, the crowd jumped up with the Nazi salute. With each foreign athlete's victory, an abbreviated version of his or her national anthem was played. When a German athlete won, the stadium rang with every stanza of Deutschland über alles, and the spectators shouted Sieg Heil endlessly, arms outstretched. According to the swimmer Iris Cummings, the slavish nationalism was a joke to the Americans, but not to the Germans. The Gestapo paced the stadium, eyeing the fans. A German woman sitting with Cummings refused to salute. She shrank between Iris and her mother, whispering, "Don't let them see me. Don't let them see me.